This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
Welcome to BizNews Briefing. It's Monday, the 20th of January, and today's show is focused on Trump's inauguration. We bring you news from across the world on what we can expect as Trump officially takes over from Biden. Our colleagues at Bloomberg give some insight into what is happening on the ground as we lead up to the inauguration, as well as some detail around the dozens and dozens of executive orders that we can expect to come very quickly from Trump as he takes on the hot seat.
I mean, we saw this effusive rally yesterday in Washington and then a candlelight dinner hobnobbing with, you know, not just Elon Musk, but Jeff Bezos talking to Tim Cook on the phone. I mean, it's really kind of a campaign style moment, if anything, not someone coming into office. And certainly the tone was very much like that. And so even though the inauguration today has to be held indoors due to the very, very cold weather, that's the first time in decades, there's a real sense of difference, as you were noting. Like the last time Donald Trump, you know, had this moment, he was, you know, having lost office in a failed attempt to, in, you know, his critics say, to overturn the election result, now being welcomed back to Washington in this very, very kind of rah-rah sort of rally yesterday. And certainly we're going to see more of that festivities today. You know, there's going to be a parade within an arena, essentially. And we know from Donald Trump's speech yesterday that he's probably going to talk for a little while. So prepare yourselves for that, because he doesn't like to give short speeches. And so there'll be more of, you know, what he said yesterday in his comments today. There'll be more pledges to come out of the gate fast. And certainly that's very much what he's going to be doing.
We've been talking too about some of the comments he's made about the 100 executive orders that he's promising. And in particular, we're interested in the measures that he could announce for the energy sector.
Well, that's right. So we know there's going to be dozens and dozens of executive orders announced, ranging over everything from immigration. That's going to be a big focus from day one. And as you were saying, you know, report that we've had that he's going to declare an emergency over energy. Exactly what the emergency is unclear. Those declarations are normally for natural disasters, for terrible things like, you know, terrorist attacks and so on. So what exactly does that mean? And what does that enable him to do? He's probably also going to declare an emergency over the border with Mexico in turn. What it does show is just he's going to try very quickly to bring back some of his old policies and also unwind the legacy of the Joe Biden administration.
Well, we'll brace ourselves for those many, many executive orders that are expected to come to the fore. Trade is another big talking point as President Trump comes to power. And Jason Osman, who's the president and CEO of the Information Technology Industry Council, outlines some of the changes that we can expect on trade and also on the tech sector. He joins Carolyn Hyde and Mike Shepherd on the Bloomberg Technology Platform to discuss.
Jason, we wanted to talk to you a little bit more about trade and your concerns there. This is something that your group has singled out as an area of priority and of concern. The Biden administration has put a lot of pressure in particular on China, but that has a ripple effect. Talk about that a little bit.
What we're really looking for and enthusiastically looking for from the Trump administration is more of a strategy that takes advantage of opportunities for U.S. companies to succeed internationally. Leadership in technology, that's what the U.S. is known for. And what we've seen in the Biden administration, unfortunately, is a lack of strategy, an inability to match the significant and serious national security interests with economic activity that promotes U.S. opportunities internationally. So on trade, our excitement and enthusiasm about the Trump administration is they're very focused on working in partnership to address the China question. And we've seen the president-elect already talk to President Xi about the strategy for dealing with that, about moving forward, working together. What we want to make sure happens, U.S. technology leadership continues. The economic driver of the U.S. economy is technology. So we can make sure that trade becomes a real opportunity for further growth.
Jason, do we not need, though, acts like a potential banning of a significant social media app that touches 170 million users to ensure national security. That was bipartisan in nature. And yes, Trump might come in and have a conversation with Xi about it, but ultimately this was bipartisan in nature because of national security concerns.
The TikTok news of the day is, of course, very interesting, and 170 million people are watching the outcome there. I don't have any prediction about what's going to happen on Monday at noon when President-elect Trump takes over. But it does highlight how really difficult these issues are to address. Mm-hmm. And the larger question of how we address the China issue, I think, is one that requires a real strategy. And what we're looking forward to, what the tech industry is looking forward to in the Trump administration, is he does seem to have more of a focus on making this a strategic approach rather than just a one-off approach. For example, we saw earlier this week the Biden administration adopted rules around AI diffusion. So these are rules that restrict the ability of U.S. companies to export AI technology, including to allied countries around the world. That's a huge mistake. It wasn't done in consultation with industry. We think the Trump administration will do a better job with that kind of issue. But that's an example of the need to balance national security with economic interests and make sure that U.S. leadership is not harmed by skewing too far in one direction or the other. That's what we're looking forward to seeing done differently in the Trump administration.
And certainly Jensen Huang of NVIDIA maybe feels similarly, and NVIDIA pushed back significantly against that latest announcement. But what is interesting is that perhaps J.D. Vance has supported, well, some views coming from Lina Khan, for example, about some of the strength and the overall domination, some would say, of certain players in tech. Just listen to what Lina Khan said, a little bit about the bipartisan nature of that.
There's no doubt that there is strong bipartisan concern about the economic power of large technology companies and how that can undermine fair competition, undermine people's free speech rights. And so we'll, of course, have to see what the next administration does. But it's certainly been an area of strong bipartisan concern during my tenure.
The FTC chair has some support, as I say, from Vice President-elect. Will you see an enthusiasm around future M&A in technology, do you think?
Well, Lina Khan has about 72 hours left on the job, and the person that the president-elect has designated to replace her has taken a much more balanced approach, and we think a more favorable approach to advancing U.S. innovation. Look, the president himself is a technology innovator. He is surrounding himself by technology innovators who are coming into office, people who will be serving in crucial roles that understand the vital role that the U.S. technology industry plays in economic growth. As far as trade and export around technology, for example, we run a $300 billion surplus in the U.S. on digital trade. That's exports of U.S. technology around the world. So I think as long as we can place regulators, as the president-elect is looking to do, who are willing to listen to industry and make sure that balance is struck between national security and economic growth, I think we'll be in a much better place for the next 4 years to ensure that the technology industry can work in partnership with government to advance economic growth.
There's so much talk on the fact that we're going to see loosening regulation around technology and technology stocks, so that will certainly provide positive momentum for that sector across the world. Earlier, I caught up with Kevin Lings, chief economist at StanLib, to get a South African perspective on Trump's inauguration, and Lings was very clear. Right now, there is so much that we don't know, and we've got to brace ourselves for those executive orders as they come to fruition.
We know that he's going to want to implement a huge number of executive orders and do that fairly quickly, because essentially he's a one-term president, right? And also, it's more than that, because you know, 2 years from now, you have the midterm elections and the composition of the U.S. Congress may well change. So you get a distinct feeling that he doesn't want to hang around, that he doesn't want to take time to build a consensus, to get Congress fully on board, to negotiate with all the different political groupings. He has got some clear ideas about what he wants to implement. He's clearly drafted a whole lot of executive orders, and he'll be looking to try and implement those as quickly as possible. So the expectation is that literally on the day of his inauguration and in the days following that, he will issue these executive orders. Now, he's got the ability to do that without approval from Congress, not for everything, but for quite a broad range of areas. He can simply write an order from his desk, sign it, send it out, and that effectively becomes law. And so He can make significant changes to things like oil exploration and the deregulation of oil extraction. He can change import duties and decide to levy import duties on any particular country or on a whole range of countries. He can change immigration laws. There's a huge range of things, and we think that if you're going to issue 100+ executive orders within a couple of weeks, then this is going to be fairly broad-based, and it's clearly going to focus on trying to put the U.S. first, trying to put U.S. business at the center, trying to deregulate the U.S. economy effectively, make it easier to do business, to allow for more mergers and acquisitions, to allow for easier extraction of mineral oil, basically go and extract oil out the ground. So a myriad of things he's going to focus on. What we've got to work out, so what does this mean for the world economy? Because we're going to get caught up in any negative effect of his ideas with regards to import duties, the impact that may have on global trade, the initiation of global trade wars. South Africa being a small open economy, if there's an emergence of a major trade war between China and the United States or between the United States and Europe, etc., we will lose out in that type of environment. And so it can be quite disruptive for a small open economy.
You do a lot of scenario planning. How do you anticipate this all panning out? Is it going to be net negative or net positive for us in South Africa?
So I think that for, let's start with the U.S., I think it's net positive. It's going to stimulate U.S. growth. It's going to reduce the cost of doing business, and it's going to encourage particularly small, medium business to expand and employ. So it's going to be good for the U.S. growth. I think it's going to set up for more antagonism between the major trading regions, between particularly China and the United States and between the United States and part of Europe. But I do think that a lot of the trade tariffs are going to be there for negotiation purposes. In other words, I think that you could find him announcing tariffs and then reversing that once he sat and negotiated different conditions, different business investments, etc. You could find a lot of those types of duties are reversed. So I'm not all that negative about what it means for the rest of the world and for emerging markets. Obviously, there's always a concern that he could eliminate our preferential trade access to the United States. I personally don't think that's a high probability. I think it's too small in the life of the U.S. to really concern themselves with it. And I think that what we've got to do is be very clear on how we align ourselves politically. What we've tended to do is shift our political bias towards Russia and towards China, even though we say we have a neutral stance. In reality, we tend to not do that. And I think what we've got to try and come across is being truly neutral, which means we've got to be favorable towards the West, towards the United States, as much as towards Russia and China, and try and look for any opportunity that presents itself. So I'm optimistic that Trump's initiatives will effectively boost fixed investment, boost growth, and send a message to the rest of the world that the way to move your economy forward is not through this myriad of regulation that has been unfolding over the last couple of years, but rather you can make a bigger difference by simply deregulating and making it easier to do business. And I hope South Africa listens to that message.
And just from a geopolitical perspective, the impact that he's going to have on the global order when it comes to politics, just your thoughts there.
So I think his greatest strength is that he's unpredictable, and that unpredictability will keep a lot of countries on edge, because you simply don't know how you'll respond. He's not going to follow a typical playbook on diplomacy and negotiation, and he can and he's willing to simply make decisions by himself and not necessarily wait until he's got Congress fully behind him. And so what I think that does is it unsettles the global order. I think what we need to see is how does China respond to this. I think they've been waiting and biding them time to understand what Trump is about, but I don't think it's going to be completely adversarial. I think what he'll want to do is maybe make some strong announcements, maybe even implement some duties or tariffs, but then sit around a table and talk to the various entities to see if he can't come up with a better agreement. So I don't think this is about out-and-out conflict and the starting of a global trade war and making the world more disorderly. I don't think it's about that at all. I think it's about sitting with the various groupings and establishing a clear role and a clear benefit for the United States in all of these discussions. And I think that message will come across. And I think there will be an acceptance that the rest of the world needs to also give in terms of the role of establishing global order and global prosperity.
Kevin, they're celebrating making business easier and the potential for deregulation that we will see come out of the Trump administration. He's also cautioning South Africa to be careful on political allegiances. Now let's catch up with Alec Hogg, the founder and editor-in-chief of BizNews, who is on the ground at the World Economic Forum in Davos. And Alec says that Trump fever has also caught the imagination of those on the ground at the World Economic Forum. Let's listen in.
The Davos man, as they call him, and it is still very much dominated by men, although there's a lot of women who have been rising up in the CEO ranks. It's still about 1,600 CEOs here out of a total group of, say, 2,700, 2,800 participants. So let's just call him Davos Man. He's very transactional. He comes here to shake hands. You know, I mean, you've been here many, many times. He comes here to do business. So they're celebrating Donald Trump. My goodness. And there's lots of rumors here that Elon Musk is going to put in an appearance. Of course, today being Monday, Donald Trump gets inaugurated, so he couldn't be in Davos today. But there is he's already committed to do a video crossing on Thursday, which is one of the highlights of the program, coming towards the end of the session, because it finishes here on Friday. But there's very strong rumors that Elon Musk is going to be here. And it was interesting to listen to a podcast on Politico with Adrian Monk. You'll remember Adrian, for many years, was head of the media. He was a managing director here, but he used to look after media. And he said to them that, yeah, he's not surprised that Elon Musk wants to come, because he groveled and tried his best to do so for many, many, many years when he wasn't such a famous person. So it'll be interesting. I'm sure that will make an even more interesting few days here.
And Alec, you use the forum, you've been going for many, many years, really to get firsthand insights into topics far and wide. What are you really keen to hone in on over this coming week?
Well, what's lovely for us at BizNews is I don't come here with any agendas. There's no sponsorship. There's no sponsors saying, hey, you will do this, or please give us so many interviews. So I'm going to our partners at the Financial Times. They've got quite a big presence here this year, and they've got some very interesting people that they're talking to off-piste, if you like. And then our partners at The Economist have also got a pretty strong lineup there. So I'll be visiting both of those for a while. There is a lot going on in the program itself. And of course, the South African delegation is here in full force. What makes it so interesting for me is that it's a Government of National Unity delegation. John Steenhuisen, Solly, the communications minister, now they'll be here. And Dion George will be here as well. So three DA ministers in amongst the group that comes from South Africa. I think they're going to have a very interesting time learning, which is what I've been doing for 19 times, my 19th participation. And I must, I'm so grateful to this organization, because it is a forum. There are so many different opinions that are expressed. The most recent times we've got quite a lot of disinformation to say, oh, the forum says you will be this and you will be that. Well, the forum doesn't say a damn thing. It actually just brings people together, as you know. But there's a lot on AI. I'll be tapping into that. There's a lot on geopolitics. I got a cracked an invitation to breakfast with Zelensky, which I see him in the flesh. It'd be great fun. And there's a heck of a lot of the South African interest as well, the African interest. So it's one of those that, you know, Bron, every time I come here, I get so pleasantly surprised, because if you arrive with no agenda and no booked out a whole bunch of things, very quickly your diary fills up and you do find that you go back home having to ponder for the next 12 months what the heck it was that you learned here.
Well, I know we're going to be catching up with you on a daily basis and looking forward to your insights in terms of what you gather on the ground there in Davos. Have a great time, Alec, and we'll chat to you again tomorrow.
Thanks, Bron, and look forward to watching the briefing every night to keep up to date on what's happening in sunny South Africa. It's so sunny here. -4 today, by the way.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
A very popular feature on BizNews is Chris Stein's weekly interview with Neil de Beer, who is leader of the United Democratic Movement. And this week, she chatted to Neil on a number of different issues, but Neil really pulled focus on the Minister of Minerals and Mining, Gwede Mantashe. He picked up on the fact that the loss of more than 89 billion rand in government revenue as a result of illegal mining over the last 13 years needs to fall squarely at the feet of Minister Mantashe.
And all of this sama-sama scenario is currently ending at the door of none other than Gwede Mantashe, because he's the Minister of Minerals and Mining and he must take this punch. So here it comes. Chris, 1949, Stilfontein mine starts and starts to grow. 1949. And in the year 2030, that mine shuts down. They start to redeploy. They start to regenerate and lay people off. And by 2050, Stilfontein official licensed mine ceased to exist. Not within a month. Zama-zamas, in specifically apparently illegal immigrants from Zimbabwe, entered those mines illegally in 2015, Chris. Government does nothing. Police does nothing. Only in 2018 is there a sporadic investigation and SAPS enters the fray to remove the zama-zamas. And this continues to 2020. In 2020, the zamas go times 3 in size. They don't just double up. They 3 times go and no one takes action. And then, Chris, suddenly, in 2024, August, they launched the new Operation Umlobo, which has now brought us to the point where we are today. Chris, 13 years since 2013, the total destruction and illegal mining was being laissez-faire. They did nothing. So when you look at Gwede, who's absolutely responsible for this, the 78 bodies that they are taking out, the starvation downstairs, the total repaying, the 28 million they are spending on policing, the total destruction of more than 89 billion rands worth of loss to government in revenue in this past 13 years of illegal mining can only be put at the table of the most executive officer, and that's Gwede Mantashe. And can I tell you what's the worst? 2 weeks ago, Minister Mchunu, the Minister of Police, and Gwede goes to their to go do oversight and within 30 minutes are booed and chased away by the community. So that's Gwede. So instead of traveling around the world, you better go sit there, get yourself a tent or a gazebo and sort this out because it's becoming a human tragedy. And then Chris, 3 nights ago, Gwede sits on a TV show and has to explain what is the success of BEE, that he gets so cornered on the ANC policy of BEE, and he is asked, but is there success in BEE in the past 30 years? Because we don't see it. And he says it's a policy, and policy takes time to get to the bottom ground. Now, I think your brain is at the bottom ground, because BEE, Chris, and you know my stance, is definitely not working. It's a failed implementation. It absolutely only made a few people rich, and the population never got empowered. So I say, scrap BEE and put in NEE, National Economic Empowerment. And he sat there as he was chewing an old Wilson toffee, and he couldn't answer. And I said, embarrassing. This is the chairman of the ANC. So I'm sorry it sounds harsh, but that man, as you can now see, is failing on so many sides. And the things he's failing in, Chris, are critical. These are not small, young things that he is failing.
Well, certainly no love lost between De Beer and Gwede Mantashe. But I want to take us back now to the markets and, again, discussions on the incoming Trump administration. Many investors are focusing on potential U.S. tax reform as being a potential kicker for markets across the board. And, of course, if we did see tax cuts, it would have a positive result for equity markets. Let's take a listen in from our colleagues at Bloomberg.
Sean, we've seen a lot of the Trump trades rebounding recently after losing a bit of steam post-election. But what can we anticipate in the first 100 days for these so-called Trump trades? Have they got a bit of momentum here, or has that played out, in your opinion?
That's a very good question. I think in the first instance, bond yields have sort of done most of the voting for the equity markets in already pushing much, much higher. And certainly that's been also seen in inflation expectations. So there is going to be some cap as the performance of the growthier stocks, I think, simply because bond yields are much more alert now to inflation risks. And of course, we've seen the Fed cuts being really pushed out now to a pause. I think in the first 100 days, from my perspective, one of the things that's going to have to be really clearly seen is about tax cuts and the whole agenda on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act being actually made permanent, and any of the reforms to tax, I think, is really what the equity market can actually feel as a tangible result from the new administration. While the efforts on things like increasing efficiency within the government and other measures may take a lot of time, it's really the tax changes that I think will be at the forefront of most people's minds in the first 100 days.
All right, tax cuts, more money in people's pockets. Does that sound inflationary to you? I mean, in the last set of Fed minutes, we had a number of Fed members putting in placeholders about things that they weren't particularly sure about. Is this, where do you stand on the inflation risk and how that's going to impact the Fed's thinking here?
Well, I think the difficulty is that the markets had assumed almost a year ago that the US would go into a recession. That, of course, has now reversed very sharply. If you look at indicators, for example, about business formation in the United States, which has remained very, very strong, company forecasts for sales in the United States over the last 2 months post the election result, also highlighting a very strong rebound. The irony is that the bond market might actually turn out to be right very, very quickly. I think the irony maybe is that really wage growth never really has come under control anywhere near where we would feel that the Fed would be comfortable. And I think that, again, is probably going to be the surprise package for the new administration. A big wild card would, of course, be much higher headline inflation. The move in energy prices over the last 2 weeks,
plus the fact there's been a very silent bull market in agriculture and food prices might make the mix very, very difficult for the early part of this new administration. So I think the bond market in the first instance is probably right that actually the inflation expectations might actually rise much quicker as a new administration unfolds its policies.
Well, let's take a quick look at the local front as we move towards that close. Not much action from a news perspective, but certainly on the positive side today, we are seeing Karoo taking top spot again as we lead into that market close, and a relatively positive showing from Naspers, MTN, Advitec and Amplats. Amplats reversing some of the losses that we saw last week. Then on the losing front, we've got Pick and Pay down more than 10%, Sasol giving back almost 4%, Truworth 3% to the negative, and Mr. Price and AVI softer on the day. Well, that brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. Alec will be reporting in from Davos daily as we get updates of what is happening on the ground at the World Economic Forum, and I'll be back tomorrow with your BizNews briefing.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.